And welcome back to Success Made to Last International Trendsetter Series. I'm Rick Tocchini. This series is about the art and science of marketing, its reinvention, the harnessing of rapid change, giving you, the listener, emerging ideas from around the globe to help your company create your best version. Our host is Deborah Malone, marketing pioneer and guru, highly opinionated, daring, and a trendsetter. She is the internationalist, connecting people and ideas in international advertising, media, and marketing through intelligent content. Join Deborah today in the pursuit of reshaping the future of marketing. Here's Deborah Malone.
Thanks, Rick, and welcome to another internationalist trendsetter show. Today's guest is Graciela Benvenista, global head of media at investment management company BlackRock. BlackRock is well known for CEO Larry Fink's belief that public companies must not only deliver financial performance, but also show a positive contribution to society if they are able to prosper over time. He has now extended that vision to include a sense of responsibility towards sustainability and the environment. Today, Graciela talks about content, media, and data, and how she strives to provide the right message to the right audience at the right time for BlackRock. She has built a career around digital media best practices in both the U.S. and throughout the world, and understands the importance of developing a data-driven marketing strategy that can provide measurable results, particularly return on investment. Our conversation is intended to better understand consumers' expectations of brands and what makes a message relevant now. Welcome to the program, Graciela.
Hi, Graciela. So good to see you, even if virtually.
Yes, good to see you too.
Welcome. Welcome to the show. Since you have a global role, I thought maybe we'd start with just asking how you're managing to keep up with the pace of work, particularly if you have to connect with team members and colleagues all over the world.
Yeah, I think that because I have a global role and I'm kind of used to connecting with people remotely, it has been relatively seamless. I guess the challenge that everyone is facing is that now we have more video calls than ever before. So our agendas and calendars are packed throughout the day. But I think I'm trying to do a good job of combining some blocking out some time for actual work and focusing some days on calls and connecting with teams around the world.
It's hard. People talk about boundaries or maybe not having any boundaries.
Yeah.
Particularly with time zone differences, life is never easy, particularly now. And a lot of people talk about just how exhausting the video calls seem to be, more so than actual in-person meetings. So who knows where we go from here. But we were talking a little bit earlier about the inundation of information right now. And you've mentioned that consumers really expect brands, particularly financial service brands, to help with information and trends on everything from the global economy to personal finance. So what does this mean for your role as global head of media, you know, particularly in terms of providing the right message to the right audience at the right time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of what we do and a lot of what we communicate has to do with helping people through this financial crisis and providing the right information and the right outlook of the economy. I don't think that it has pivoted what we were planning to do from a marketing standpoint significantly. We were always, you know, communicating thought leadership that's coming out of the BlackRock Investment Institute. So, I mean, right now that thought leadership is all about the financial crisis, and it's very much related to that. So, I mean, to that extent, our mission as a marketing team is becoming even more important right now, because we want to help consumers navigate through this difficult situation. And I do think, and I think there are a lot of studies and research and pieces of research out there that show that, you know, consumers are really focused on the brands that are going to help communities, and not only you know, by providing funds and doing specific actions that will help the situation, but also by, on the long-term basis, by providing the right information. There is a lot of research out there actually saying that consumers are not going to be using brands in the future who do not help people during this financial crisis or help their employees. So it's really a great opportunity for brands and companies to step it up and to show their value.
No, I certainly agree with you, but it's fascinating what you say about information, particularly in a world where we have so much information that we're not sure what information we can trust. And it does seem that now people feel a little bit more secure getting information, certainly from a brand that they trust.
Yeah, from companies as well. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, companies, or a company brand, however you want to say that. That's interesting. It's very interesting, particularly
in
terms of...
And from what I've read, it's also people are trusting information that is coming from experts. So I think it's also an opportunity for different brands to show and shine in their area of expertise. So, you know, obviously healthcare companies in the areas of health, different foundations like the Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation in the areas of vaccines, you know, financial companies in the areas of finance. And because it's also one of these times where people, and I'm sure you're experiencing this, like everyone is saying how they're almost addicted to COVID-19 news and content. And it's really, really hard to distinguish the sources that are valid and the ones that you need to pay attention to, because everyone has an opinion in that matter. Mm-hmm. So again, back to the point of how important it is for the experts to come across as experts and to show what they're good at and inform consumers the right way.
Yes, no, I agree. I've now become a big fan of Deborah Birx as she gives her daily briefing. I've also become a big fan of her scarf collection. But maybe she'll be the next form of influencer. You never know. But I also wanted to get you talking a little bit about one of your favorite topics, and it's value from data and how that plays into some of your choices right now. I also know that you've talked about the triangulation of content, media, and data, and I find that fascinating and would love to know more.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's definitely an area which I'm really, really passionate about, because I do think that data should be informing both creative development and creative optimization, as well as media planning and buying strategy and optimization. And it's not as simple as it sounds. It's actually really, really hard to crack. And obviously there are brands that are better than others, especially direct to consumer brands have more data, and they can harness the power of data a lot more than just brands whose communication is focused on branding. I do think that the particular situation and crisis is really data becomes very, very important to how we communicate to consumers during this time. And it goes back to what we said before, that consumers are really inundated with information, and I'm sure they're very inundated by brand messaging as well. A lot of brands are trying to do things and pivot their communications to help consumers to communicate the right message, etc. And it's really, really important to make sure that consumers are not inundated with messaging and the right consumers are hit with the right message so as to maximize the effectiveness of the message and actually make it useful, because what we're all trying to do right now is to make sure that whatever messaging we serve to our consumers is useful to them. Knowing if consumers are interested in the messaging, if they have interacted with our messaging before, if they want more, or if they're not interested and they've seen our message for four times and they don't care, we cater to those needs and we serve the right message to the right person at the right time.
Yeah, and it's not easy. It certainly isn't easy.
No, definitely super hard to do. It's also hard because, organizations and companies are big and there are different departments and different teams, and different teams are all trying to do the right thing. And it's how do you coordinate in a really, speedy fashion, all the different messaging to be able to reach our consumers.
Sounds like a very big dashboard.
Lots of views. Yeah.
Yes. Even if that. It's interesting because when we spoke before, you made some very fascinating observations about how working remotely is not only becoming more collaborative, but it's also becoming a bit of a great equalizer, because I guess on a lot of these video calls, you see people in each box like the Brady Bunch, and everyone does have an equal space and an equal opinion, or maybe some people are saying things that they didn't before. But talk a little bit more about that, because I hadn't thought of it, and I just found it quite interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was super interesting as well when we started, when we all started working remotely. It's just a simple observation of mine. I think that it levels the playing field a little bit because, if you think of big boardrooms or meeting rooms, there are particular people who feel comfortable sitting
at
the head of the table. Yes. Or for other company cultures, it's all about sitting in the middle of the table and having side conversations or having a very loud voice, like being that person who will interrupt, who will express their point of view and not allow the person to go from out of 30 slides, they will only have the chance to present two but now I feel that, first of all, a lot of people have to be muted so that they don't have the opportunity to interrupt. It doesn't matter where you sit because, we are all just this tiny screen.
Ahead, yes.
Yeah. A lot of people also who are really important people, because they have to balance between work and their regular lives, prefer audio to video because they have to multitask. So I do think that it gives people the opportunity to go through their work, and people will only speak if they have something important to say, because otherwise people start talking on top of each other. So I'm sure you have experienced that. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, and I have seen a lot of people, so a lot of talent thrive during the situation, because there are people who don't like being in conference rooms and doing big meetings, and they feel better, just working remotely. Like it's just a different way of working. I was also talking, it was interesting, I was talking to my mentee. Mm-hmm. The other day, I'm part of this of iMentor, and it's her first year in college, and she was saying how she enjoys doing college work remotely from home because mm-hmm. she's with her little sister, she's used to screens. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Not to say, of course, and the big caveat to all that is that the collaboration spaces in my opinion, will still be important in the future. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see how the dynamics have changed a little bit.
No, you're right. And I think it would be interesting if, as we look to the future of work, if that becomes a positive change where everybody does have a voice when they truly have something to say. I mean,
yeah.
That talk about that as a huge change.
Definitely.
As a time saver, but talk about real collaboration and real contributions. That would be extraordinary. Now, I know there's another topic that you're quite passionate about, and I also think, interestingly, BlackRock is quite passionate about it too, and that's public companies having a sense of purpose. And Larry Fink, your CEO, is quite famous for having said things. Now let me quote. To prosper over time, every company must not only deliver financial performance, but also show how it makes a positive contribution to society. So I have a question for you. Given your long history in advertising and working with so many brands, do you think that some of the acts of generosity by companies during this crisis are an expression of their purpose, or are they just acting kind of humanely and responsibly now? And is there even a difference? I'm just curious. Yeah. Is that their media demeanor right now? Or is it sparking more purpose among these companies?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of things there. I think that a company's efforts can be connected to their purpose at this time. That said, philanthropy is although it is connected to a company's purpose, it can also be not as connected to the company's purpose. But it is definitely an opportunity for companies to understand how important having a purpose is, and again, based on a lot of consumer research that is being conducted right now, you know, consumers were always saying that they would prefer brands with purpose, but it now becomes more relevant than ever before, to the point that they say that they will never use a brand if the brand does not help with the situation at hand. That said, and before the crisis, though, so crisis aside, the purpose is something that needs that the company needs to live and breathe in everything they do. So all the way from the way they treat their employees and the company culture to obviously it being reflected in philanthropic and social impact initiatives. So I don't think that in an ideal world, they should not be separate. Right now, surely there are some companies that, you know, now understand how important their having a purpose is, and they're also doing a lot of philanthropic acts, which is great. It's fantastic. And hopefully in the future, the two things will be more integrated. I think Nike did... Nike was a really good example about how they combined their purpose of kind of creating an athlete in everyone in the way they responded to the COVID-19 crisis in China. Because what they did there is they did create a fitness app for people to be able to stay fit at home. Mm-hmm. They actually predict that their revenue is going to be quite solid, because combining that with a great e-commerce offering that they have, it is really, you know, they are providing something to the consumers, but they have always stood for that purpose. I mean, it comes in handy right now, but their purpose was always to have an athlete in everyone. All of their communication was about the fact that everyone is an athlete. So they really lived up to that during the crisis, and coupled with the fact that, you know, they can sell products online and they have a great e-commerce infrastructure, you know, that led to sales. So I thought that was a brilliant kind of manifestation of purpose.
Yeah, because purpose is not, of course, it's about doing good, but it's also about a commercial aspect. It's about building a business too. And I think that consumers certainly want a company to thrive, but it also wants a company to thrive while doing some good or filling their needs in
yeah.
some way.
And yeah,
that,
exactly.
That's become an enlightened view. I'm curious about it because I wonder now if some of these acts of good that we're seeing will encourage more companies to think a little bit differently about their behavior, as you said, through everything that they do. And
are the companies going to be good to their employees as well, right?
Yes, as best as they can, depending their industry and their revenue models and everything. Airlines are going to be tough.
100%.
You know, so it is interesting. Well, as we talk about that, what do you think marketers should be doing now? I know we touched on it a little bit, but are there specific ways they should be communicating or actually specific media choices they should be making now?
I think empathy is a really important word in describing the way marketers should be communicating. And I do think that as a consumer, I would want to see brands play a supportive role for the situation in whichever way they can, right? Nike's a good example. Time Out, which changed their logo mm-hmm. to Time In, and you know, it is also a really good example. So trying to recognize the situation and reflecting solutions and providing solutions through products and services that each company offers, I think is super important for consumers. And that's the main thing that needs to be communicated. I don't think it would come as a surprise if you're trying to sell a lot of product at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes without saying that it may be irrelevant. And it also, I don't know, it is going to be interesting how consumers react to that because, you know, people are financially stressed right now. They need to be able to not get inundated with sales messaging necessarily, unless, of course, it provides actual solutions. Mm. I think that empathy and also, you know, respect in the number of times that you reach a consumer and how many things you tell a consumer is also important.
Well, that's a good point because I think there's so much focus on the messaging that one of the things that annoys consumers most about advertising is the number of times they see something or how they're retargeted, particularly in a digital world. And talking about that level of respect is important. And I don't think that we're talking about that enough sometimes.
I agree. Yeah. And or that we're thinking about it the right way. And again, it goes back to data, right? Because mm-hmm. companies may be thinking about it, but they may not be able to harness data the right way to be able to understand how much they're inundating consumers. So, again, data to me at times like this is more important than ever. And again, I'll reference Nike again. They're really, really good in harnessing the power of data. So you know, some companies are better equipped and have better infrastructures than others to deal with this situation at the time.
Yeah, well, first-party data, of course, I guess, is the best source. And I guess if they're doing an app, they're getting access to a lot of that. What are your sources for data? I assume it's a combination of first-party and other, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I cannot say a ton of that, but it's as always, it's a combination of first, second, and third-party data.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, you need another dashboard for all of that, huh?
Of course, definitely.
So now, are you planning for the future of your business post COVID-19, or do you think that this is a new normal, or you know, everybody? I think we're now at a point where everyone's looking ahead rather than in this moment, you know, in today.
Yes, and it's really hard to tell what the future is going to be, I think. I think it's too soon to be able to say what this new normal is going to be or when this will come about. I think that for any company, and I think it's hard right now because everyone is focused on how to react to the situation, but putting the right infrastructure in place will be able to set companies for success for the future. So things like, you know, data platforms and developing the right infrastructure that would help use data in the future, I think that's definitely going to be relevant. Now, how people are going to use it will depend on how that new normal looks like, but being able to have, you know, clean databases and being able to use the power of data is going to be important. But the future, I really don't know. I think it is kind of early to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're at least honest to say that because there's a lot of people pontificating on what the future will look like.
I definitely don't know what the future is going to look like. So that's if anyone refreshing. Does, please let me know.
that's refreshing. I do think that it seems that the nature of work will change somewhat, given how we're used to working remotely now and how we're all getting more comfortable with different digital technology to enable that to happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, there will definitely be a role for working remotely. There will be less of a stigma, I'm sure, because, you know, it wasn't available across the board and across all companies. And it always depends on your line of work, right? There is some type of work that cannot happen remotely, but to the extent that it's possible, there will definitely be less stigma. And people will be able to incorporate that in their lives a lot more. I mean, I can imagine that people who have kids at home and did not want to work from home, maybe they have found other ways to do it, and maybe it will now be easier for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm also wondering if, you know, home offices are going to be, like, people will want spaces that can accommodate for a home office, because that is going to be part of the way they work. Maybe it's not going to be like always working from home, but if it can be part of the way they work, I'm wondering if there's a case for more home offices. I don't know.
I think so. People aren't only looking for the remodeled kitchen, they now want the home office.
Exactly.
And I it seems that maybe offices themselves will be happier if we continue the social distancing to have less people in the offices.
Yeah.
And maybe the offices are a place where people come together.
Exactly, and collaborate.
Or collaborate, yeah, when one needs to. So what is the first thing that you will do when this situation improves?
I think I just want to go out and see friends and just, you know, not be at home anymore and socialize, watch a show, like see some art. I don't know. It will be hard to do all these things, I'm sure. They won't come in the near future, but whenever they are available, I will definitely take on the opportunity to do it as fast as possible.
No, that's wonderful.
What about you? What do you think?
Oh, good question. I think what I miss is maybe friends coming over, and just some of the entertaining aspect. I think regardless what form it is, and of course we all want to support the restaurant industry, whatever form it takes, I think what we're missing is that in-person connection.
I've never missed it so much in my life.
It's interesting. I mean, it's funny because people are talking about how much they miss their team at work, and whoever would have thought people would be saying that?
Exactly. I've sent so many emails to people saying, I miss you. I wish I was at the office now.
That's
yes.
Funny.
And when I see people's faces, because there are tech issues and we cannot always do video calls. Some people are on audio. When I see people's faces, it makes my day.
It's so important. You're right. It does. Well, you have certainly made our day.
You always make mine.
Oh, you're very kind. No, but with so many of the things that you brought up, quite specifically about media and data and how we think and how marketers act at these times, and we're grateful to you sharing some of these ideas, and we hope that you'll be back with us soon to talk
a
little bit more. Yes. All right. Well, thank you, and do stay safe. Okay.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Graciela, for participating in today's show and for being a pioneering part of our marketing community. You've inspired our listeners to think more about the value of content, media, and data in the right mix.
And thanks for joining us for another Internationalist Trendsetter Show hosted by Deborah Malone. To get further information on today's topic, visit the-internationalist.com, your trusted source for innovative marketing trends, best practices, aspiring to create new world standards. Have a great week.